Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answers. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. To grow this community of information and action, I hope you give us a five-star review. Come visit me on hightruths.com to learn more about the show or download a free prescription for naloxone. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. Today's episode is sponsored by Physicians for Healthy Communities, a physician-led organization that educates on the science of prevention to improve public health. Visit their website to learn how they prevent substance misuse while supporting individuals, families, and communities. Go to physiciansforhealthycommunities.org. Hello again, High Truths listeners. Get ready for a weedy conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. Weedy, as in pot, cannabis, marijuana, Mary Jane, reefer, skunk, and the devil's lettuce. This November, voters will not just select Trump versus Harris, both sides claiming the end of democracy if their opponent wins. Voters in Florida will vote on legalizing recreational marijuana. What's the big deal? Most states have already some form of marijuana legalization. Only Idaho, Wyoming, Kansas, and North Carolina have kept marijuana completely illegal. Yet, it's a big fight. And by big, I mean millions of dollars big. Florida Amendment 3 ranks as the most expensive recreational marijuana legalization measure since 2010. Those who want legal pot poured in $146.98 million. Those who oppose, well, they didn't have that kind of cash, but they still came up with $27.85 million to vote it down. I'm hoping the people of Florida learn from the mistakes of California. Legalizing marijuana and then letting the cannabis industry determine public health protection and regulations has been a public health disaster. Every day we treat marijuana poisonings in the emergency department. Every day. Babies are poisoned. Adults have encephalopathy, drug interactions, scromiting or cannabis hyperemesis syndrome, and serious mental health crises. Serious crises. Marijuana shops sell 90% THC products. That's so potent, it's been like legalizing methamphetamines. Most products have various contaminants and pesticides. Some products have candy shapes with pretty packaging attractive to kids. And while the state is so proud of getting rid of flavored tobacco products, the smell of pot and secondhand exposure is commonplace. Let me ask you, would you want R.J. Reynolds writing policy about smoking? Do you want Purdue Pharma to write the rules on opioid prescribing? Why would it make sense to have big marijuana control their own regulation? To learn from our mistakes, Florida should include smart public health consumer protections along with any legalization. To learn more about weed in Florida, I reached out to Dr. Jessica Spencer. Dr. Jessica Spencer has a Doctor of Education in Organizational Leadership with a focus on substance abuse prevention and treatment. She has over 24 years in the prevention and treatment field. Dr. Spencer served as the face of the Vote No on Florida campaign to legalize medical marijuana. She is now working on defeating recreational marijuana in Florida. To learn more about Dr. Jessica Spencer and Florida Amendment 3 to legalize marijuana, check out the High Truths show notes. Dr. Jessica Spencer, welcome to High Truths.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Jessica, you studied criminology, substance use prevention, and I guess that all adds up to your advocacy about marijuana. Can you tell us a little bit about your path?
Absolutely. I, you know, at heart am a substance use prevention professional. I worry deeply and care deeply about our communities and our young people and their brains and what messages we're saying and sending to our young people and even to adults as well. You know, I don't want to see an influx of marketing for, you know, alcohol, prescription drugs, tobacco, whatever it may be. So I am very passionate about this field, and it seamlessly goes into the reason why I am absolutely against the legalization of recreational marijuana here in our state, and quite frankly, any other state, certainly here in Florida at this time. It's very important for me, and it definitely is a passion project.
That's great. And it's hard to be on that side. I think that we're on the right side of history, but it can be isolating. People love their pot. It's their weed is their religion. And you're up against a multi-billion dollar industry. Have you ever felt threatened or insecure because of being outspoken about your position?
Yeah, I think in the past, I've certainly had issues and areas of concern. But again, you know, I think to your point, you know, the truth is like a lion. Set it free and it will defend itself. It's a wonderful saying. It's a wonderful phrase. It's been around forever. And I think it's true. And I think I am called to get the truth out there about this insidious industry and this very dangerous drug of marijuana. It's not the marijuana of yesteryear that I think a lot of people think is no big deal and it's safe. It's not a problem. And you're right. There's a lot of people that are very passionate about it on the other side and just try to make sure that we all keep it very civil and are respectful of each other. But I definitely think we are on the right side. And it is in defense of our brains, as Dr. Martha Madger says. And it's in defense for me and our community and our young people and just the humanity as a whole. I think we have to do this. We have to fight this industry. And that's why I keep pressing forward.
So let's talk a little bit about Florida Amendment 3, legalizing recreational marijuana. What's the big deal? I mean, most states have legalized pot. And so why is this so divisive for Florida?
Well, I mean, there's, 24 states at this point that have recreational marijuana. It's a failed experiment, no matter what the pro side says. It is a failed experiment. It has cost other states innumerable issues, you know, not only monetarily, but just within, again, when I go back to worried communities and our children, you know, we see increased black market, we see increased crime, we see increased mental health episodes, we see increased ER visits. This is not as benign as many people would think. And so when I do come back to the amendment itself, and here in Florida, it's very important for people to understand that this is a constitutional amendment. This is not, you know, just a bill that our legislators have put on the ballot or have, you know, we'll be talking about in session, and that we as citizens, you know, either 5, 10, 2 years down the road realize something's wrong here. We probably shouldn't have gone down this road. We can't change it. We can't fix it. It's a constitutional amendment that would be forever enshrined in our state constitution as written. And that's a huge problem because I think to your point, you know, a lot of people are thinking, oh, it's just benign. It's not that big of a deal. It's just pot. Lady, what is your problem? It's just weed. It's not, though. We are talking about a constitutional amendment that's not as simple and not as benign as the ballot title of adult personal use of marijuana, which I think, again, the majority of people can get on board with. We have adult personal use of alcohol. We have adult personal use of tobacco. But that's not what this amendment is about in our state at this present time. This is about corporate greed. This is about a marijuana industry that has already dumped $90 million into this initiative to ram it down Floridians' throats. And it doesn't belong here. It doesn't belong in our state. It doesn't belong in our brand. That's not what we're known for. And again, I go back to the failed experiments in other states and all of the social costs and issue that they're seeing. We don't want that here. It doesn't belong here. And because it's a constitutional amendment, we would not be able to legislate our way out of it and the many issues, which I'm sure we'll get into with the language of this amendment. And so we have to vote no. Your listeners and your viewers have to understand what this is truly about. It's corporate greed, and we have to vote no in November.
Shouldn't marijuana be decriminalized? Like, people shouldn't go to jail for pot.
Sure. I think we all can get on board for that, right? But I think it's also insulting to try to say that our law enforcement are just out randomly or targeting individuals for just smoking a joint in their vehicle or while they're sitting at home. That's just not happening. Or while they're walking down a sidewalk. That doesn't happen. That's not what our law enforcement are doing. In fact, the thought that there are all of these people in our prisons here in Florida for simple possession of marijuana charges, it's a fallacy that has been debunked, number one. Number two, if we look at decriminalization or to try to reduce arrests, I think we have to be honest with each other and look at what the actual truth is with the charges. There are no charges for just simple possession of marijuana. when you see a simple possession of marijuana charge come through, it is coupled with other charges and higher level charges. So to say that all of these people are being jailed and are sitting in our jails in Florida with a simple marijuana possession charge is just an absolute fallacy and not true. And it's insulting, again, to our law enforcement who are doing real work, and also insulting to Floridians' intelligence that we're going to believe somehow that there are hundreds and thousands of people in jail for simple marijuana possession.
Is there anybody in jail in Florida for marijuana, for just marijuana possession alone?
Not that I can tell. No, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the bill again. Who actually wrote the language of the bill?
I don't know who wrote the actual amendment language, because again, it's a constitutional amendment. I don't know who wrote it, but I can tell you who's backing it. And it's the mega marijuana corporations. It is, in particular, there is one in particular that has put about $80 million, if not a little bit more at this point, to this initiative. I believe from what I'm being told, this is actually the most that's ever been spent on a constitutional amendment in the nation. It's outrageous. So again, this isn't a group of, you know, I think people would envision when we're talking about a constitutional amendment that there had to have been a group of really smart people, way smarter than I, you know, a blue ribbon panel, if you will, that sat around and said, we need to have marijuana in the state of Florida, so we're going to go ahead and write a constitutional amendment for it. That is not what happened. This was written by the mega marijuana corporations, the mega marijuana movement, to put recreational marijuana here in our state and create a huge industry for them. They've gone on record as saying so. They've been so bold and braggadocious to say that this will be historic for them and their bottom line. It will be a $6 billion industry. So again, it's the industry that wrote this constitutional amendment, and it's insulting to all of us as Floridians that they want to take over our state, and we're not going to let it happen.
So let's talk about a little bit about the players, the players, the ones who wrote this amendment and putting millions of dollars to get it passed are Smart and Safe Florida. I love these like names, Safe. It's like, it's not really safe, but it seems like you can't always go by the names of these organizations. But Smart and Safe Florida is really True Leave, which is the largest marijuana retailer in Florida, and the other supporters of marijuana. Is, you know, George Soros has been involved in legalization of all drugs. Is he involved in this as well?
To my knowledge, I haven't seen his name, but he also has many other, if I remember correctly, he has many other organizations or names that things are underneath. And so I can't actually even answer that question. You are correct. There is one, you know, organization or a company in particular that is very vocal and very much behind this initiative and has dumped an incredible amount of millions of dollars into this.
Okay. And on the other side, on your side, is Keep Florida Clean. And under that is Kevin Griffin, CEO of Citadel. And he's put millions of dollars, not nearly the amount as, you know, the big industry that big marijuana has, but he put a lot of his own money. So it makes me wonder, like, who is Kevin Griffin? Why is he so passionate and putting, you know, his own money on this?
Right. So I've never met him personally. And again, you're right. He has put a lot of money in, but it certainly isn't as much as the other side has, which I think is important for people to understand and recognize, to follow the money. And that historically, these types of initiatives are well funded on the pro side, because again, they stand to make a lot of money. It's about corporate industry and it's about their bottom line. Mr. Griffin, he is a businessman. He came down here from, I believe it was Chicago. He is he lives in Florida, and for all intents and purposes, everything that I've read in his op-ed is that he cares about the state and he does not want to see Florida become another one of these, you know, marijuana states that has such negative impacts that we can't recover from. And so from what I understand, he's just a caring individual. I obviously thank him very much for his assistance here, because we need all we can. And that's all I really know about him. I'd love to meet him one day, but I haven't met him at this point.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah. So he says, don't let Florida go to pot like it did for California.
Right.
So speaking of the state and other big people who are for and against, you have the governor. Governor DeSantis is against Amendment 3. And can you tell us about him and his involvement?
Yeah, so he personally, he hasn't been involved. The state of Florida in that way hasn't been involved. But he obviously is against it, and I think smartly so. And not only because he's obviously on our side, but because he's also a lawyer, right? So he understands what a constitutional amendment means. He understands what the language in the amendment means and why it's important where certain words are left out or also where certain words are put in. So I thank him for his support as well. And again, we just want to make sure that everyone is actually reading the language of the amendment, understanding that there are some really smart people that have recognized that this is a bad plan for Florida, that there are multiple issues with it. And I just want everyone to be educated and to read it and to ultimately at the end recognize how bad and how flawed it is and ultimately vote no here in Florida.
And recently, President Trump, who also lives in Florida, I don't know if it's actually came in favor of the amendment, but he says, I support legalization. The time has come. But he says he also says he doesn't want smoke everywhere. So I'm wondering if he really read the amendment or really understands the impact of it.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, there's two pieces there, right? So we have the fact that the president has come out and said he is in favor of it, President Trump. And there's been questions of, well, how do you feel about that? And I don't really feel one way or another about it. I know that there are certainly politicians on either side, right, that are going to espouse their opinions and their thought processes behind it and may ultimately vote yes or no. But I don't believe that citizens of any state, particularly Florida, I don't believe that we're sitting around waiting to see what our elected officials decide on this. Again, I go back to, we are smart enough on our own to be able to read the language and make our own decision of whether this is a good plan for Florida, which it is not. And then on the other side of that, when you talk about, you know, we're not even sure if he read it because he doesn't want smoking, I would imagine that he didn't read it or he was lied to about it because it's very simple with the language. They do not put anything in there that would allow the state either legislatively or local municipalities to regulate where you can actually smoke marijuana. And the sad part of it is all they needed to do was cross out one word and we would have been able to do that. Our legislature would have been able to do that because backing it up too, you know, if President Trump says he doesn't want smoking here, we do have some legislators saying, don't worry about it. I'll write a bill and it'll be fine and we'll do away with public smoking. But the fact of the matter is that's not how constitutional law works. The second part to that means you know that this amendment is flawed. And so you are expecting the legislature or you're expecting us to believe that the legislature can fix the flaw in your amendment or the amendment. But again, when we're looking at a constitutional amendment, we need to understand that words matter. And in there, it says the legislature can enact rules and regulations that are consistent with the language of the amendment. But because the authors did not allow and did not cross through the word medical, we can't regulate and we can't ban public smoking here in the state because it would actually be inconsistent with the language of the amendment.
That's interesting. I would wish that I could have like 2 minutes with President Trump because I feel like I could convince him on that. Although
me too. He can call me anytime. I am more than happy to talk to him. I hope you hear that, sir. Please call me.
So the devil's always in the details because we say, oh, we want marijuana to be legal. It's like, oh, yes or no. But it's more complicated than that. So can you, Jessica, tell us a little bit more about what's in the language, what's not in the language? You made it very clear that this is constitutional, so it's a big deal, not as easy to fix or add regulations that are important. I always think, you know, the greatest mistake California and other states have made is that they legalized it, and then the promise was to do the regulation, and that promise has failed. And so to the lesson there is that you don't legalize without adding the regulations at the same time. To me, that's what history has taught us. But tell us about the details of what's in the language and what isn't in the language.
So some of the details that I'm finding make the most impact or make people kind of question, again, you know, the genuine, you know, we care and we're about safe Florida, safe and smart Florida, is exactly that. I think first we need to recognize the language that's in here as it relates to the corporations, right? So there is specific language in here that the medical marijuana treatment centers, which would automatically be grandfathered into having their own dispensaries for recreational, there at that point truly is no different or no difference. There is civil and criminal immunity all the way through their process. So they've protected themselves from any potential lawsuits. Let's say, as we saw in Holyoke, Massachusetts, where there was an employee that inhaled cannabis dust for whatever reason or whatever was wrong with the manufacturing plant. They were hospitalized and they sadly died. Well, you would normally, you know, be liable for that. You would normally be responsible for, rather, and you would have to pay fines or you could potentially be sued over those types of things. They've written themselves civil and criminal immunity. So we, if anything bad happened with their product or anything happened, you know, again, in the manufacturing with their staff, et cetera, they don't have to be held accountable for anything. So
is that what's written in the language or?
They have literally written in there, and it's in anyone, and I urge anyone to please read the amendment itself. They have literally written in there that they shall not be subject to criminal or civil liability or sanctions under Florida law. And they also, that's also written for individuals as well. So it creates a whole host of problems that I don't even think other states have seen. So it's interesting to me that the corporations that wrote this or that are certainly backing this in a strong, strong way, they've basically rendered themselves immune from any responsibility further down the line or presently with their product. And the other piece where we talk about words matter, we touched a little bit about public smoking. But the other big piece is, as in many other states where they've allowed your personal growing of, you know, 1 to 2 to 6 plants or what have you, the author of this amendment specifically left personal growing out. So there's this thought process of, oh, I'll be able to grow my own plants. And this is great. This is about freedom. This is about my personal right to be able to smoke and grow and use marijuana. But again, words matter, and why this is on our ballot and why they wrote this is they left that out. They put the word cultivate in when talking about the industry and the corporations, but they left the word cultivate out when talking about individuals. And remember, if the legislature was going to come in, because the other claim has been, oh, don't worry about it, the governor can fix that. The legislature, they can write a bill allowing home grow. Well, no, they can't, because the word cultivate isn't in the language. And if you write law, it has to be consistent with the language. And so, no, we can't do that. And so we have to vote no. Even if an individual is interested in growing their own marijuana plants, which that's a whole separate argument to get into, fine, you want to do that. But guess what? You can't under this amendment. So you actually have to vote no as well.
As a sellout. So even the people who want to grow their own pot, this does not allow them to do that. The product liability part, that really troubles me. Is that going to be true also retrospectively for the medical marijuana? I mean, you cannot think of a medication that if it causes harm, you don't have some type of liability or risk benefit calculation with that. I mean, our country is very obsessed with labels and product liability and safety, and to get complete immunity for that as you're changing your product, as literally there's new product that they call marijuana coming out that meets that they don't even define what marijuana is. That's egregious.
Well, and I think that's the great point about it, right? Is this is a constitutional amendment. They have written in civil and criminal immunity for themselves. And to your point, let's say 5 years down the line, we find out which we already know. But 5 years down the line, Floridians say, wait, this is not healthy. This is not safe. We shouldn't have this here. And they want to do something about it, or they want to hold the industry responsible. We can't. So let's say you have a moldy product. You purchase and ingest a moldy product. Let's say there is a new chemical that they're using with their products. And we find out that it has led to whatever debilitating condition or
right. There's all sorts of arsenic. There's arsenic. There's pesticides and people are smoking it and the secondhand smoke on kids. And
exactly. All of that, they have written themselves civil and criminal immunity as it relates to every part of their manufacturing, sale, possession, et cetera, all of it.
Wow. I don't think the public probably knows that.
They don't, but that's what we're here for. So yeah, we're going to let them know for sure.
All right. Let me try. We talked about the devil's in the detail, but let me try to play devil's advocate like in favor. So what's a big deal? People want to smoke. It shouldn't be illegal.
I get it. I don't like to be told what I can and can't do either. I totally understand. But this isn't about your personal freedom. This is really about corporate greed. And we have to care about our fellow man. We have to care about our fellow Floridian, and we have to understand what this is truly about. And it's not about your personal freedom and your ability to smoke weed if you want to smoke weed. And let's be honest too, it's not that hard to get, a medical marijuana card here in the state. So it's not as if we have this limited amount of marijuana here. We have quite a bit, but let's also pay attention and understand the industry. Again, they've come out and said that this will be historic for them. They talk about a $6 billion industry. They've written in the highest amount that an individual can have for personal possession at 3 ounces. Even if you want to use marijuana, I do not know anyone that needs to have 3 ounces of weed. That's literally from 100 to 200 joints, depending on what website or however you pack a cone or pack a joint or a bowl. That is an incredible amount of marijuana that's just unnecessary. And you can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but I think California was only 1 ounce. 3 ounces is astronomical. So again, you know, and even going back to the home grow and what you want to do and your personal freedom and, hey, it's no big deal, lady, what's your problem? You know, if they wanted personal freedom and if there was a true belief that this was about your personal freedom to use or grow marijuana, then they would have allowed home grow. They wouldn't have it up to 3 ounces. But even with the home grow piece, you're not going to spend $90 million to create a backyard competitor. You're spending $90 million to create a consumer. And when you write in civil and criminal immunity, you don't care about the consumer. All you care about is your bottom line and how much money you're going to make.
Yeah, I would say if you want to legalize marijuana in Florida, this is not the way to do it. Be smart. Learn from California and their states and do it the right way with protections.
Correct. Through your legislative process. And that is the only way to do it that keeps us having our voice intact, right? So if you pass a constitutional amendment, and again, 5-10 years down the road, arsenic levels or issues or problems, or let's just say our landscape changed and this just isn't what we wanted here, we can't do anything about it. Where if it was done, like you say, through the legislative process, we could at least come in and speak to our legislators and say, hey, I'm a little uncomfortable with this public smoking. I really, you know, want to change it. And they can go and put a new bill in place to change that statute. But when we tie our hands with a constitutional amendment when it passes or when you've written one, again, the language matters and it would forever be enshrined as written. We will not be able to make any changes that are inconsistent with the language.
What about when they say, hey, studies have shown that just because states that pass marijuana, there's no increase in youth use?
I disagree. I absolutely disagree. You know, I know
too,
there's...
But I've heard them say that. It's amazing. How do they come up with this?
Well, and a lot of times I think they're relying on studies that maybe show that youth use has leveled off, but let's also, has the question changed? You know, on those youth surveys, sometimes the questions change.
Or the COVID days and COVID when, like, you know, there were kids stayed home, so they didn't use drugs.
Well, there's that, and not everybody was being questioned, right? So not everybody had the ability to take that survey. Or let's say the survey doesn't reach every county in your state. I don't think that's a great measure. I don't think that's the only measure to look at. I think there's plenty of other evidence that shows us that youth use is increased. we can look at ER data and we can show how many, you know, the increase in youth accidental exposures. We can see the ER data and the law enforcement calls and emergency services calls for
youth. And we could see, we have data on increased youth use next to where you put dispensaries. We have that data too.
Absolutely. So the fact that they try to say that it doesn't increase youth use, I think is, again, offensive to smart parents, smart people and citizens to know. It stands to reason that you would, especially when you're marketing. Most of the time you're marketing to adolescents and you're marketing to youth with the brightly colored signs, with cartoon characters, with fun names, using celebrities that are popular among a certain age group. You know, I put it back to the tobacco industry, right? The tobacco industry, the new smokers, you know, they were trying to get new consumers. Marijuana, the marijuana industry is no different. They are targeting children. They have vans that drive around that look like ice cream trucks where they're selling marijuana out of it. We don't need this here. And it also, you know, the language in the amendment, there's no language in there that says the department can regulate how this is marketed. So you will see the vans, the colorful, you know, candies, all of that, you will see that targeted to youth. And to say that they are not targeting the younger generation to create more users and a longer, you know, a longer aged or consumer, it's a fallacy, it's wrong, and it actually doesn't match their marketing plan and what they want to do here.
Yeah, it's amazing. But they've learned from the tobacco playbook, and we should learn from that as well. What about, well, look at all this great tax revenue to the state. That's what California legislators, oh, we get all this tax money. Voters wanted this, and it's going to schools. It's going to mental health. What about that? Is there any kind, I call these bribes, with tax dollars from marijuana? Is that earmarked to schools, to prevention programs, to?
Not at all. In fact, language about where tax revenue would go is not even, it's not even written in here. So we can all wish and hope and pray, and they can say, oh, it's going to create, in fact, I think I just saw an ad that said it's going to be $1 billion in tax revenue that will go to your education or go to your schools and police. And I'm like, really? Where in your amendment did you write that it was going to go to schools and law enforcement? You didn't. So we can all, as Floridians, wish and hope and pray it's going to go somewhere, but we don't. The bottom line is we don't know where taxes would go. But I do know that in states that have recreational marijuana, the social costs typically, if not every single time, outweigh the tax revenue. Right now, Colorado is seeing that for every dollar in tax revenue, there's another $4.50 in social costs. So actually, your tax benefit, your tax generated this amazing amount of revenue, you're actually operating at a deficit. So it's simply not true. It's a fallacy. It is a pipe dream. And they didn't even bother to write in where they thought the wish and the hope and the dream should go. But they have a commercial saying it's going to go to education and law enforcement, but not according to their amendment.
I heard a debate from Luke from SAM and John from, I don't know if he's from the pro side, but I think he's I don't know if he's one of the donors. Obviously he even mentioned how much he loves pot. But in that debate, he says, you know, go around Florida, you can't smell it. We've got a million medical users and you can't smell smoke anywhere. And if there is smoke, that's where I want to go party. That's what he said. First of all, is that true? Can you not smell smoke? I mean, I had ice cream with my granddaughters the other day and we're sitting there and I'm smelling it. It's like, why should my granddaughter with asthma be exposed to secondhand smoke? Why is that okay? Do you have that problem now with Florida?
We do. And so I don't know where John is hanging out, but he's obviously not getting out very much because there is smoke everywhere. You do already smell it here. You smell it in stores. I was just in a rental car agency the other day and some individuals walked in and that's all I smelled. You smell it while you're driving down the road. You know, it's coming out of other people's cars. You smell it on the sidewalk if you walk by people. So we already have it here. We already smell it here. That's already an issue. And this is a huge area of concern for Floridians because, again, the individuals that wrote the amendment did not allow our state to ban or regulate or manage where public smoking will be. They did not cross out the one word medical, which would allow us to do that. And so there's a huge concern when we have them talking about how they're going to triple the market, right? So they're going to flood our market. This is going to be this huge industry for them. We're going to see marijuana everywhere. In fact, again, braggadociously, they came out and said that this will be like, you know, a Walmart or a CVS on every corner. So yes, we're going to see it everywhere. We're going to smell it anywhere. And there isn't anything that we can do to put fines in place because you're violating someone's constitutional right. We won't be able to say you can't smoke this on the beach or you can't smoke this in an outdoor restaurant. Or, you know, to your point, I could light up in an ice cream shop if I wanted to. And you wouldn't be able to do anything about it as the ice cream shop owner because you are violating my constitutional right. Because again, they also wrote in the civil and criminal immunity. So there is no mechanism in place. A, our legislature has to write something that's consistent with the language. And B, there's no mechanism in place that would allow enforcement of a violation of that regulation or municipality putting in whatever. But again, they can't do it anyway. So you will smell it everywhere. We already do smell it. I'm sorry, John, you're incorrect. Maybe you're smelling it too much yourself and you don't even recognize it when we're out in public.
Yeah. And then the other thing he said that was like, it was a like one of these half-truths is like he says that Big Pharma is against this proposition. And yet they're the culprits because people don't die of marijuana. They're dying of opioids. And I say half-truths because people are dying of illicit fentanyl. They're not dying of pharmaceutical-grade fentanyl. That's wrong. That's not what's happening. So I don't know where he gets that. Maybe he's mixing up his data from the days of, you know, OxyContin. But that's, we don't have that problem now. And then I don't know if it's even true. Did Big Pharma make one ad, one statement, one op-ed, $1 against this proposition?
Not that I've heard, but again, this is another typical tactic of the pro-marijuana movement. They don't want to talk about the problems with their products. They don't want to talk about the problems with their initiative. They want to conflate things, and they want to move your focus onto something else. I would love to talk about Big Pharma in another conversation. I would love to talk about alcohol and tobacco in another conversation, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about this amendment. And so conflating the issues in an effort to confuse voters is obnoxious because it takes away from what we are trying to educate people on, and it tries to move the focus to something that really has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I don't think anyone would or have an issue, you know, with how wonderful the alcohol industry, tobacco industry, and the pharmaceutical, the negatives of it, right? Where addiction has happened. No one's going to dismiss that, but that's not what we're here to talk about. So it's frustrating when they do bring that up because that's not what this is about, and we need to stay focused on that.
And I mean, whatever you want to say about Big Pharma, they are our gold standard when it comes to medications. And there are liabilities and protections, and I'd much rather buy an FDA approved medication than any snake oil that's being sold in any shop. Without those, we count on those protections. Without that protection, then we don't have a safe pharmaceutical industry. We don't have a safe medical institution.
Absolutely. And with that, I mean, when it comes to pharmaceuticals, to your point, these pharmaceuticals and drugs are here. They come with labels. They come with contraindications. You know what you should and shouldn't take them with. They come with dosages. You know how much you should and shouldn't take and when and what time and how. That's not how this industry functions. So again, I do think to your point, it's kind of like this half truth, right? It's let's look at this object over here and not focus on the one that really is at hand and should be discussed. You know, you can bemoan Big Pharma and the FDA all day long, but you're absolutely correct. That is our gold standard. And there are measures in place to keep us safe, provided that we follow the prescription information and we follow how you're supposed to be taking your medications.
Right. And you're not going to find pesticides in your oxycodone. Okay. Florida is a red state. Is this a red and blue issue?
It's not. It's nonpartisan. It's bipartisan. It's whatever you want to call it. This has nothing to do with red, blue, purple, green, yellow, I don't care. This has to do with public safety. This has to do with us as Floridians and what we want and believe needs to be here in our state. And again, you know, there's people from both sides of the aisle that are either for or against for whatever reason that they have. And at the end of the day, I don't care. I care about what Floridians want, and I care about Floridians being educated and reading the amendment and understanding that they have to go beyond the simple, benign ballot title and the benign ballot summary that doesn't really tell you, like you said, the devil's in the details. It doesn't tell you what it really means. It doesn't give you the opportunity to see the words that are in it and the words that are not in it and understand how a constitutional amendment works. Constitutional law supersedes all other law. You can't just go by the benign ballot title and the benign ballot summary.
Yeah, I'd go more. It's not just about public safety. It's public health. It's consumer protection and lack of that and the way it's written. So you made it very clear that this is a constitutional amendment that makes regulation afterwards much harder. But can you explain that to me? Let's say this passes. And now, okay, we want regulation. We want to make sure that we don't have smoke everywhere, as they say. What happens next? Does that have to be another bill, or what's the process there?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking again, because I think this can get very complex and it gets very confusing for individuals. So I absolutely want your listeners or your viewers to understand how this works. So constitutional law supersedes all other law. That supersedes state law, state statutes. It supersedes a municipality's ordinance that they may put in place. Constitutional law supersedes all other law. And so if this was to pass, which it won't, because we are smarter than this and we're going to vote no in November, if a constitutional amendment passed, for instance, let's say this one, the legislature would have to come in and they would have to write an implementing bill. But in that implementing bill, they have to be consistent with the language in the constitutional amendment. So we'll go back to the public smoking. The reason why the legislature cannot put a ban on public smoking or regulate public smoking is because in the section where it references smoking of marijuana, it only states that you essentially could only regulate the smoking of medical marijuana in any public place. All the author needed to do was cross through the word medical, and that would allow our legislature to put a ban or put some sort of regulation in place on public smoking. If the legislature wrote a bill, or in that implementing bill, they put in there banning public smoking in a public place, restaurants, condominiums, amusement parks, etc., that would be inconsistent with the language. And there are plenty of lawyers that would then sue the state because they violated the constitutional law. They violated the language in the amendment. So again, it's very important for people to understand that if there's a question or you have a concern about the language here and what could possibly happen, you have to vote no, because we cannot legislate our way out of those problems. You can only write legislation or a local ordinance that matches or is consistent with the language of the amendment.
Okay. So the other thing, like when California legalized marijuana for recreational use, they also created the Cannabis Control Board, and that is dominated mostly by the industry. It's not neutral, or it's not public health focused, even though it sits under the Department of Public Health. Is there a plan like that for Florida?
So here's what's even more interesting. If you actually go to, and I have the amendment in front of me, if you go to where it talks about implementing regulations, there's something even more fascinating or yet disturbing by this. And again, this is all about the corporations. There is not one mention of what the department can regulate as it pertains to recreational marijuana use. Everything that's in the language for implementing regulations talks about medical marijuana. So again, it's a free-for-all. And our legislature will not be able to come in and really write anything that has to do with what we're concerned about for public safety and what we are listening to individuals, you know, Floridians that are concerned about public safety and what they want either for their neighborhoods or where they live or where they, you know, go with their families.
Yeah, I told my listeners, we need to learn from history, and would we want big tobacco to be in charge of the rules and marketing and nicotine potency? Would we want Purdue Pharma to be in charge of opioid overprescribing? And if not, why are we allowing big marijuana to control the rules and regulations on public health?
And I think that, you know, the Safe and whatever their name is, the Smart and Safe Florida, or Safe and I don't even know what their name is, because it's a misnomer anyway. You know, they talk about how, oh, this would be wonderful. You know, we want safe and regulated, you know, sold out. Wouldn't you rather have it sold out of a storefront or a dispensary? And the fact of the matter is, no. You know, they say that this will reduce the black market. But again, learn from history, right? We see in every other state that the black market actually thrives and it flourishes, because with those regulations, or with, you know, the added taxes that they have to add or to cover their overhead for their buildings, individuals are going to seek cheaper illegal options, which is the black market. And I remember listening to an interview from a drug dealer in a cartel in Colorado saying they love legalization. They don't not want legalization because it creates a larger market for themselves, because people are forced to go to the black market to purchase. And let's also not forget that, you know, we're talking about youth, right? And so there's this idea and there's this concept that the pro side is coming out and saying all of these individuals are being arrested and they can't get into college and they can't get into law enforcement, or they can't get into the military, et cetera, or they can't go to law school. Well, this amendment doesn't fix that either, because it specifies 21 and up. So our 21 and under are still going to be seeking out and finding the black market to purchase their substances if they were going to. And again, you increase access, you increase availability, you increase use. So the more shops we have, you know, again, the CVS and Walmart on every corner, the more shops we have, the more inundated our youth are going to be with the messaging that this is a safe substance. And we know it's not. We know that the THC levels are astronomical. It's not the marijuana of the 60s and 70s where we were looking at 0.75 to 3%. We're looking at 35% with flower alone, you know, the raw material. And then in our vapes and our oils and our shatter, we're looking at 70 to 95% THC. And I think if you're concerned about youth brains, and you're concerned about even just a small part, you're concerned about the potency of this drug, people need to understand that marijuana is a fat-soluble drug. It lives in your fatty tissues. The fattiest, you know, area on your body is your brain. And so it's bouncing around in there at these high potency. And we need to be careful with the messages that we are sending to our youth and to our neighborhoods and our communities, that this is not a safe substance. You can't regulate it, and you don't do away with the black market.
All right. So let me go through a series of regulation. I kind of know the answer to them, but I want to go through a series of what I would think that if I was writing a bill to pass legalize marijuana, then I would include a series of public health protections at the same time. And I would start with a definition of what marijuana is. So is 99% THC okay? Because that's like legalizing methamphetamines. So is there any cap at all?
I have not seen a cap.
So, I mean, you're legalizing what people think, oh, it's just marijuana. But no, 99% THC is not just marijuana. That could put you in a cardiac arrest. And I've seen that and treated that. And that's like legalizing methamphetamines. What about synthetic marijuana?
We're not even looking at synthetic marijuana.
And like, I don't know if that's in the definition of the law, because does that make that okay with all the... just the synthetic products that are like 100 times more attractive to the cannabinoid receptor, or the various Delta products. I don't know if there's such loopholes in the bill if that is included in the definition.
It references marijuana products and the cultivation, the manufacturing, the production of marijuana products. They do not specify between synthetic marijuana products. So I would imagine that this is simply about marijuana. And again, to your point, you know, when we're talking about 90% THC, we are not talking about the pot of the 60s and 70s, Cheech and Chong, Woodstock, you know, stop freaking out, lady, reefer madness, right? That's not what we're talking about anymore. It is a completely different drug. You know, I often hear, oh, it's a plant, it's from the earth. Well, it's not when we are crossbreeding plants and we're literally
the shatters genetically... and the dabs and the vapes are not right. from the earth. Those are all synthetic.
Well, and they're manufactured in a way that's also dangerous. Even if you're trying to go solvent free, they're still dangerous. These are dangerous products when we're looking at the THC potency. So this is not a simple substance that's just from the earth. You know, don't worry about it. They're purposely engineering this plant and these strains of plants to be highly potent and highly addictive.
Childproofing. Is there any protection on childproofing? Because the number one cause of babies, these are not kids with addiction. These are not kids who are smoking. These are, you know, average age of 2.5, 3 years old, getting into mommy's purse and eating a gummy, ending up in the ICU in a ventilator.
Yeah, there's no language about how they can package or market.
Candies. What about candies? Various candies, Weedos that look like Cheetos.
There is no language that speaks to how they can market, package, target.
Warning labels, science-based warning labels like we did for tobacco, not small print that nobody could read, but actually evidence-based warning labels like we do for tobacco, like we do for alcohol. Anything like that for Florida?
Nothing. There is nothing in here about how they can.
How about, I'm just going to go through my little list here, Jessica. How about prescription auxiliary warning labels? Like, okay, not on the product. What about when you pick up your Plavix or your blood pressure medicine? Does it say don't use with marijuana? Anything like that for protection?
I see none of that.
Nothing of that. Potency caps?
I do not believe there's any of that in this.
Product testing for carcinogens, contaminants, pesticides.
Not a word.
Semi-synthetics, the Delta products, you could do Delta 8, 10.
That is hemp. That is separate. That is not in this amendment.
Not in this one. Okay. Marketing attractive to kids.
Nothing is written in this amendment. Nothing.
Smoking in public.
Nope.
Impaired drivers.
Here's the other interesting part. I'm glad you actually brought that up. The only section that mentions that, and here's going to be something very interesting for your listeners or your viewers to pay attention to. There is a section that says, nothing in this section shall permit the operation of any vehicle, aircraft, train, or boat while under the influence of marijuana. Great. We all can get on board with that. But what that also means is everything else is excluded. That means you are immune civilly and criminally from anything else that would possibly happen except for operating a vehicle, aircraft, train, or boat.
Okay, explain that a little more. So can I drive a car while smoking pot?
No, you cannot.
Okay.
No, you cannot. But if there's an accident at a job, right? Let's say again, I'll go back to the whole.
I could smoke at work as a doctor.
You could. Why couldn't you? Absolutely. It doesn't ban. It doesn't restrict where you can smoke. Absolutely.
I don't think people would want me, any doctor doing surgery. I asked this to a dispensary owner. Would you want me to take care of you while smoking? And they said no. All right. And are any of the protections that we have learned from Big Tobacco, have we implemented any of those lessons in Big Marijuana?
Not a single one. In fact, it's almost as if they learned from Big Tobacco what to protect themselves from. And they've also learned from situations as in Holyoke, Massachusetts, where an employee inhaled the cannabis dust and subsequently died. They've actually learned from those in a way to protect themselves and protect the industry.
Right. They have learned, but we may not have. Or hopefully we have. We'll see what happens in November. What's the pathway in November to defeating this very prejudiced bill or amendment the way that it's written?
Right. They need to get to a 60% threshold in order for this to pass. And obviously, I believe they will not, because, again, I think Floridians are smarter than this. I think it's offensive to Floridians, intelligence that this is a good plan for Florida. I think once people start reading and understanding what the language actually says, again, past that benign ballot title, they understand that they will vote no in November because this is a bad plan for Florida. This is about corporate greed. It's not about personal freedom. And not here, not in Florida, we're not going to allow it.
I like that. Corporate greed, not personal freedom. Don't let the state go to pot like other states have done and learn from history. And if you want to legalize it, then do it the smart way with adding those protections. And right, don't let the fox watch the hen house.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Jessica, thank you. Thank you so much for your time explaining this to our listeners. I know it's a contentious debate in Florida, and we wish you success.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where you learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to Physicians for Healthy Communities. Visit physiciansforhealthycommunities.org and view their video and resource library. High Truth's producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.